You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to Bears Over Beers. I'm Jeff Burkett, a writer for Windy City Gridiron, and I'm joined, as always, by EJ Snyder. EJ, it's Thanksgiving week, my favorite holiday of the year. Not quite sure why this year, given what we're going to have to be subjected to around 11:30 in the morning Central Time, 9:30 your time. But are you excited for Thanksgiving?
I'm excited for the holiday. The particular brand of Bears football we may see on said holiday, possibly a little bit less exciting, but that's okay. It's not going to diminish my love of the holiday. I also love Thanksgiving, so I'm looking forward to it. We got a little time away from work, got some good food coming up, hopefully. And, you know, I think we gave the fans a little map a couple of weeks ago about how to enjoy Bears football from this point out, which is selectively. Like, if it's turning your stomach and you have dinner later in the day, turn it off.
Or if you're having lunch with your in-laws and you don't want to have to take the verbal abuse of hearing how bad the Bears are, maybe just go into the garage and grab another slice of pie. You know, who knows? But we'll get into the game in a little bit, but let's start off with beers. What did you bring on today?
Ooh, I have something that my lovely wife got me from McMenamins, which I know you're familiar with, an Oregon conglomerate that buys old historic properties and turns them into really cool pubs. Yeah. And this is a crowler, which is the coolest thing ever. It's halfway between a can and a growler, and they bottle them on site. This is their Scotch Ale, 6.3 by volume. So it's got a little bit of a kick to it. It's a nice winter beer. A little bit sweeter than some scotches, but still has that bite. Nice good head when you pour it. Beautiful dark brown color. And it will help me forget a little bit about how poorly the Bears played. What did you bring on?
Well, I was going to bring on a Michigan beer, but I saw that I still had this, and I'm excited. So this is definitely a JB beer, and it feels very Thanksgiving-y. So this is the Great Black Stack Bake Off. It's from Black Stack Brewing, and it is a pineapple upside down cake. Caramelized pineapple, cherry, maraschino cherry juice, brown sugar, Madagascar vanilla, and milk sugar. Like, I mean, if
what are just, you doing?
It just sounds delicious. It sounds Thanksgiving-y. I'm so excited for this one. It's just, it
sounds
calling
like
my name.
Pie in a can is right. What it sounds like, right? No, I'll give a little teaser. I have a JB beer coming up, and I've previewed it. And it is something else, but it is not anything like that. That is one of a kind. So,
well, I brought on that pineapple beer a little while ago and it was really good. I really liked it. It was kind of like a cake, had like white cake in it, mixing it and stuff like that. So anyway, I saw this on the shelf. I was like, oh, I got to try this here too. So, you know, I got a reputation I have to maintain.
You do. And you know, as long as it's all good, cause far be it from me to tell anybody how to beer or how to enjoy their food, their steak, their coffee, or to fan. I've had that interaction quite a few times over the last couple of weeks, not only with Bears fans, but I view games at Buffalo Wild Wings occasionally when I want to see all the games, because despite being a semi-successful, semi-pro podcaster, I do not have screens and games for, you know, screens enough for all the games. So I'll go, and it's cool because you get to see a mix of fans, and you get to see people that fan in all different ways. They're the quiet types that just watch and eat and leave. They're the people that kind of cheer or fist bump when their team does something cool. And then there are the people that absolutely lose their shit in public and bounce around and do crazy stuff. I don't really care. Like, I'm just like, whatever, man. Like, it's your gig. Like, you get to interact with your football team however you so choose, and that's not my business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anything, I think I've grown to the fact that I just kind of do me, right? Like, I might be the guy that goes to the bar if I have to because the Bears aren't on, mm-hmm. and I just kind of sit in the corner, and I'm pretty quiet. I might fist pump to myself, right? But if it's like a real emotional game and like things are going, I'm going to probably kind of migrate towards those Bears fans that have been a little bit, you know, rowdy at the end of the bar. I'm going to give them a high five and stuff. But for the most part, I'm kind of just like off on the corner of my own, just trying to take the game in, just trying to concentrate because I just don't want to get distracted by all the other stuff that happens around the bar.
Yeah, I like to take in the other stuff as well. I didn't originally. Before, I was very much like you. A couple of years ago, if I would go and watch in a bar, I would sit away from people. If there were multiple screens, I just wanted to kind of be close and see the Bears screen. As I've, you know, grown in my football watching and talking about the rest of the league, I do, like, take the ads now and, you know, look at what else is going on. I took a good 3 or 4 minutes yesterday and watched the Colts run game, which, if you're not familiar with it, is just a thing of beauty right now. And then I can flip back to the Bears when they come back from a commercial break or whatever. I've expanded. I can catch, like, 3 or 4 screens now out of the however many there are, 12 or 15 around the place. But yeah, I think everybody has their own way, and I'm just to the point where I'm like, hey, if you're enjoying it and you're coming out and you're supporting it and it's something that gives value to your life, like, do it the way you want to do it.
Yeah, and if you're still sticking with us here after the Bears fell to whatever they are, what now, 3-7 or whatever it is, 3-6, you know, you have to find things that you're excited about. You have to start to look at this schedule and say, what am I looking for, right? And we're staring at a Thanksgiving game against the Lions. I kind of like this tradition that the Bears are starting to play the Lions more frequently on Thanksgiving. It's kind of fun. And the Lions are 0-9-1, right? Like, they haven't won a game. They tied the Steelers. They just couldn't pull out the victory there. They have been close in a bunch of games. And so this really sets up as kind of a dangerous game in my mind. Except for the fact that they are starting a quarterback that I did not know was a human person before last week. And so what do you know about these Lions, and what are you kind of interested in on Thursday?
I'm interested in hoping that it is a somewhat watchable football game. And I can say that with a little bit of freedom, even as a Bears fan, because there's no really terrible outcome for this game. Andy Dalton is starting for the Bears, and the thing that most Bears fans are looking forward to, if they're still looking at the season at all after the Bears' performance so far, is how does Justin Fields mature? How does he develop? How does he begin to build as the future quarterback of the Bears? Well, he took a shot in the last game. He's got a rib injury. They're not ruling out broken ribs. They're banged up ribs. You know, officially listed as bruised ribs right now. Bottom line is they're not going to play him on a short week versus the Lions. So the thing that most Bears fans are looking forward to is not going to be there. We're going to get Andy Dalton ball. We know pretty much what that is. Andy Dalton is a known commodity, a known known. The rest of the offense has not looked tremendous. So I'm just hoping this isn't an overall trash fire with lots of runs into crowded boxes and just so many miscues. And I know I'm probably hoping against hope there, because the Bears have been a team full of miscues, coaching errors, execution errors, bad calls in bad places. They've just found a way to derail themselves time after time. So hoping that we get a relatively flag-free football game that has some moments of excitement in it. It seems like maybe a high bar for this one, which isn't great, but it is, I think, decent commentary on where the Bears are as a team, which is right down at the bottom of the league with, honestly, only the Lions underneath them now, in my estimation. They're a bad football team. It's a bad roster. It's banged up. They're not playing well. They're not maximizing their talent. They're not playing sort of above their level almost ever. They're certainly not out coaching anybody. So really, I'm hoping for, like, can we play a clean football game and have a few moments of excitement? I think that's the summary of the cap of my expectation.
Well, when you look at the Lions, what's interesting about their season so far is that there's a couple games that got away from them. They probably should have a couple victories on the season this year. They've also been blown out a few times. They're not a very good team. Well, what does that sound like? The Bears have been blown out three times too, right? So, you know, I think there's a tendency to think like, well, the Lions are garbage and, you know, they got no shot on this one. But I've been saying it for weeks. I'm worried. I'm worried about this team, that the fact that they're a cornered animal. They're playing a divisional opponent. They've already seen the Bears. You take away a couple of the Bears' best players, certainly the most exciting young player, Justin Fields. You take away their best player, Khalil Mack, right? So you're taking away some of their best pieces. Now, the Lions are banged up as well, but what about this from just an on-paper standpoint? Do you see that the Lions could have an advantage here?
It is possible. The Bears, again, have not played up to the talent they do have. And as you mentioned, a lot of their top talent, either not on the field or on the field, but recently banged up, which you always have to sort of wonder. Guys tend to want to rush back. They don't want to sit on the bench and lose their starting job, even in a real dumpster fire of a season. So a lot of pride. These guys put a ton of effort into their preparation. And, you know, there's pride. They're putting out tape for whomever, right? If they're under contract with the Bears, they're putting out tape for a prospective new head coach. If they're not under contract with the Bears, this is their resume as they go out into free agency. So the idea that guys are just shutting down and loafing and not playing hard. Some guys are, but the majority of guys in the NFL are going to play hard to the end of the whistle because they know that everybody has access to tape. The Lions have had some flashes. They too are banged up. They're going to be without their starting quarterback, as you mentioned. But their young defensive line is starting to flash a little bit. Levi Onwuzurike, who was one of their top picks in the interior defensive line, former UW Husky, real flashing three-tech type, had a couple of flash plays last weekend. Like, he's starting to string some impact plays together. The Bears offensive line famously or infamously has not played very well or very consistently this year. They've played decently in the run game occasionally. They didn't last Sunday. Their pass protection has been spotty at best. Sometimes it looks decent, and whoever the quarterback is gets a little bit of time, and sometimes it folds instantly, and defenders are in the lap of whoever's taking the snap within about 2 seconds, and that's not a recipe for success. The Lions have some defenders, famously the two they drafted at the top of this last year's draft, and those guys can get home. And look, they're not playing superstars on the other side of the ball. They're going to have some opportunities against this Bears offensive line. And if you get in there and bang up Andy Dalton, Bears don't have much behind him either if Justin Fields is on the bench. So that's a way the Lions could get on top real early and fairly easily. I hope that doesn't happen, but that's a sort of path to the Lions playing competitive football. And you're right, they have had a couple of games that were close. This is not all 30-point blowouts. They could manage, and who knows? We've seen it before with backup quarterbacks, even with the Lions. It wasn't Boyle, but backup quarterback comes in for the Lions, and they rallied. They played really well. We've seen it with the Washington football team. Taylor Heinicke came in, and everybody's like, well, season's over. Ryan Fitzpatrick went down. Taylor Heinicke's led them to some sort of gutsy victories. So it's possible that he actually gives them a spark, even though lots of NFL fans like you didn't know his name before, maybe last week. You never know. Dan Campbell, head coach team, seems like they can kind of get fired up at a moment's notice. Maybe it's just the coffee, but this could be the week they catch fire. If they go up, you know, a fluky score early, say there's a, you know, strip sack, fumble, recovery for a touchdown, and the Lions put 7 early points on the board. The Bears are only scoring between 14 and 19 points pretty much every game. 7 points starts to look like a fairly insurmountable lead with this offense. So if the Lions get up early, they are a very dangerous opponent, which sounds like the weirdest thing to say about an 0-9-1 team, but I have to agree with you.
Well, it's more of that they're, you know, these guys don't want to be winless, right? I mean, I was really hoping that they would beat the Steelers just so they would just kind of get it out of their system, because this team isn't trying to be good. Like, this team is clearly trying, they stripped down the roster. They're clearly trying to rebuild, but they're playing really hard. And when you continue to play hard this late in the year, even though you're bad, one of these times you're going to hit. Like, the Texans just beat the Titans, right? Like, this is not – this is going around the league. Like, these bad teams the Jags beat the Bills. It was an ugly game. It was just a disgusting game to watch. But they beat them, right? And so those are good teams. The Titans and the Bills are good teams. This is a different story that we're talking about here with the Bears because they're not a very good team. And so, I have been worried about this. And when I watch the Lions, they're passing attack. If Goff comes back, he's at least – he's a bad quarterback, but he's at least like a bad NFL starting quarterback, right? Whereas this guy, Boyle, looks like he is just a bad reserve. But whatever. If Goff comes back, maybe I can kind of be a little bit worried that he'll find 22 and pick on him and, you know, move the ball that way. But really, I'm actually not seeing a great recipe for the Lions offense to move the ball that well against this Bears defense, even though the Bears defense is depleted of a couple of their better players, because they've really played the run well. And I think that's really what the Lions can do, is they can run the ball with Swift. And it seems like the Bears have stepped up, even with Mac missing. But am I missing something there? Do you think that the Lions can have success on the ground against this Bears run defense?
Not probably regularly. You're right. Overall, they've found a way to stiffen, to not allow big, largely gashing gains on the ground. They've done it for stretches of games. Like, they've fallen off. Their run defense has not been consistent the whole way through, where they simply lock everybody down a little bit like New Orleans was doing before last week for the whole season, where they just said, nope, you're not running on us. It hasn't been like that. So there are opportunities, and the tackling in their secondary has been suspect. So if somebody does get to the second or third level, there's a possibility there. We saw it a little bit on Sunday where the Bears allowed some early rushes right up the middle that the running back didn't take contact for 6 or 7 yards. Now, they buckled that down, and by late second quarter, right before the half, and in through the third quarter, you didn't see too many more of those. It wasn't time after time they were getting gashed, but early in the game, there were definitely some runs right between the tackles where guy went 4 or 5 yards before contact and then pulled for another 2 or 3 before he was tackled and got down. Am I super worried about that? No, because the run game is not really going to stack a ton of points unless you're Indianapolis. And let's not mince words. The Colts and the Lions have very little in common. The Lions are not suddenly going to become a juggernaut running the ball. The Lions have as many faults as the Bears do. It's going to come down to a few plays, which is what it comes down to between good teams, but this is two sort of evenly matched poor teams. It's still going to come down to a couple of bounces. Who gets the extra possession? Who gets the fluky interception? Who gets a strip sack and recovers deep in the enemy, the enemy territory? That's the game's still going to come down to those few plays. It's just, both teams are probably going to try and fumble it away. We saw with the Lions against the Steelers, multiple chances to win that game, couldn't get it done. We saw with the Bears late as last Sunday, they led that game with a minute 40 to go. Looked like they had that game probably won. And then defense collapsed. They let Baltimore go the length of the field, score, and that's it. So they're going to have to try and limit their mistakes, but both of these teams are very mistake prone.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the Bears, but let's pause here real quick just to have the sponsors buy us a beer, and we'll be back on the other end of this.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
All right, EJ, let's flip it around and talk about the Bears. So the Bears are going to be starting the ginger-haired quarterback, Andy Dalton, instead of Justin Fields, because Fields, quite frankly, is not a very good idea to rush a guy back out there after an injury. and we're talking about a short week. And so the backup becomes a starter again with Dalton. And, you know, Dalton, I don't know. I saw some stuff on Twitter. People are like, Dalton played better. And if Dalton was playing all year, it's like Dalton completed less than half of his passes. Dalton was rushing throws, right? And people, Fields needs to, you know, get quicker on his processor. He's holding the ball too long. Well, Dalton was the opposite. He was getting the ball out way too quick. He wasn't letting things develop, and he was dirting balls. Like, I mean, it was not a pretty performance from him. He completed less than half of his passes against a less than good Ravens defense. So I don't really know what people are talking about, but whatever. But like you said earlier, we know what to expect from Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton is a guy, and he can run the offense with some ability, right? Like he's not a dud, but you know, he's not a transcendent talent. And particularly at this stage in his career, you know where he's at. So Dalton, you know, he did look like he at least had a little bit of a connection with Goodwin on that deep pass. You know, Mooney caught 5 of 16 targets. I know that's between both quarterbacks. That's not a very good mark. So hopefully he can kind of improve that efficiency. But what do you expect out of Dalton here against a Lions defense? Like you said, they got their defensive lines coming together, but their secondary.
Yeah, middle zones are going to be where Dalton can go to work, and he does. He can throw between the hashes. He came out and actually acted or played, I should say, a little bit differently than we saw him early in the season. Early in the season, he was captain check down. He was everything to the side and really nothing beyond about 6 or 7 yards. Like, I think he had single-digit passes in his starts beyond that. Like, it was all to the side and all short. He came out in relief on Sunday against the Ravens, and to me, he looked like, I posted a tweet that he looked like that basketball player, that three-point shooter that's just chucking him up. From the time he gets in the game, he's just whipping them up there. He's not hitting a lot of them. He's clanging them off the rim. He's airballing. It doesn't matter. He just keeps pulling the trigger. And then late in the game, he hit one to Goodwin. But he looked really rusty. I said he was the definition of rusty on the field because he was missing everybody. He was missing behind, high and behind. And he was missing the deeper balls over, right? Just past the outstretched hands, anywhere from 6 inches past to several feet past. And he just looked really rusty. He was whipping the ball up, but he was throwing it down the field. And that was not something we saw in his earlier iteration. So it gives me a little bit of pause, you know, his sort of average depth of target. And I know why people think Dalton played well. It's because they're looking at the box score. They didn't watch the game. And they go, he put up 200 yards and a half. Like, yeah, it's way better. Well, the first 60 yards in the touchdown was a literal 2-yard throw. It was a, you know, bubble screen to a wide receiver. It's a 2-yard throw. Mooney makes some great plays, makes a couple of guys miss, goes 60 yards. It looks like Dalton in 2 throws has 60 yards and a touchdown when what he did was throw a screen reasonably well. And I understand that. And then he just missed and missed and missed and missed down the field. He finally hits that late looper to Goodwin down the right sideline. And who knows? Maybe with a week, well, not a week, short week, few reps with the starters, he sort of dials it back in. He doesn't miss as many of those balls. And if that's the case, he has a good chance to tear the Lions up because they are not a top quality pass defense right now, even if the defensive line is starting to show some flashes. Overall, this team is not matching the rush with the coverage, which is what you want to do. They've had a lot of breakdowns in the secondary. Dalton's going to have a lot of opportunities. And look, their linebackers aren't great either. So he can hit those middle crossing routes. And if the staff is smart enough to scheme them up, now, that's a thing. They probably aren't. But if they are smart enough to scheme up some levels stuff where you run one wide receiver out in front of the other and make that middle defender, usually a dropping linebacker, choose like, hey, which guy am I going with, the first guy or the second guy? And it's almost like an RPO, but it's like a PPO. It's like a pass option, right? Dalton's read is, where's that linebacker going? And I'm going to throw it to the guy that's therefore single covered. They did that once with Fields on Sunday. It looked really good. He threw to the back guy. The first guy cleared everybody out. He threw to the back guy. That was the longer of his completions to Goodwin on the deep in. But those passes are going to be available. The Lions are not super strong there. And if Dalton is
even a little bit more consistent, he has a chance to look really good because the opponent is really not that great.
Yeah, this is the worst thing about missing Fields here is that this was an opportunity for him to rack up some cheap stats. That's really what it is. And to be quite honest with you, it would be nice if he could do that because his stats are not that great. And that's going to shape a lot of offseason narrative because that's what people do is they look at the box score and they're like, yeah, his stats are terrible, right? And so it's unfortunate that he's going to miss this. I want to talk about David Montgomery, though, because it looked like Montgomery could have had a big game against the Ravens and just did not get the carries. The Bears just did not. They kind of reverted back to that old Matt Nagy offense where, you know, they can't stay on the field. And even when the running game's working, they're not using it. But Montgomery looked pretty good. Do you think that you mentioned the Lions, you know, defensive line being a strength of theirs. This is still a team that can run the ball pretty well, even against good defensive lines. So to me, it seems like they're going to want to try to get Montgomery involved early and often in this one because he should be fresh because he didn't really carry the ball that much on Sunday.
Yeah, he didn't look great to me either. He looked a little bit rusty. He ran hard. He always runs hard. He didn't seem to have that sort of pop or explosion. And to be fair, he didn't have the holes that this line has produced, even against quality opponents. Week one against the Rams, this line tore open big holes in the Rams' defensive line. We've seen it with we saw it with Khalil Herbert. He had some really good opportunities against, you know, against Tampa Bay. Strong rushing defense. They had 124 yards. Like, this is a unit that's capable of running the ball, but they didn't look like it on Sunday. They didn't. There were a lot of runs that just sort of weren't going anywhere. There was no real opening. It's not Montgomery's fault. Just the whole, you know, rushing offense is, just like passing offense, is everybody playing together. However, I'm with you. I think this team needs to rely on the run to get good, right? The pass for them has been really inconsistent. It's not a way for them to sustain drives, and they have looked good intermittently rushing the ball. They have looked powerful. They've looked like they can overwhelm people. And I honestly think it's a strength of more of their players on the offensive line to run block than it is to pass block. Guys like Larry Borum at this point is inconsistent pass blocking. He's a big, big, bruising offensive lineman who, when you let him get his pads into somebody, is going to light up and soar the rest of the guys. And if they start to tear some of those cracks open, and I would hope that it's a balance between Montgomery and Herbert, because we've seen that Khalil Herbert, given the opportunity, is very productive and efficient and can rip off some big gains. Keep both of those guys fresh, rotate them through. Don't go with the sort of lead back or workhorse back model. Just, I don't care how you want to rotate them, give them both some chances, and let that line sort of put its pads down and say, we're going to try and run on these guys until we start getting 1 or 2 yards a carry, and then we might revert. But we're going to bear down. We're going to try and bury these guys early. And if they do that, they could get on a roll and they could kind of roll over the Lions with a, what I'll call a low degree of difficulty, right? Handoffs are a lot less difficult than even 4 to 6 yard speed outs, right? A lot less potential for bad stuff to happen. And if they can do that, cool. Like, that is base NFL football, and it will give them confidence and they may start to go on a roll. If they go away from the run and they run it a total of, you know, 10 times in the game and they throw the other, whatever it is, 45, 55 downs they have, we're probably going to see a result that maybe they win the game, but it really comes down to whether or not, again, Dalton's dialed in that connection and the receivers are getting some separation, catching balls, all the things that haven't been happening on the passing side.
Yeah, Montgomery went for 58 on 14 carries on Sunday. I mean, that's not numbers that blow you away, but it's over 4 yards a carry. I mean, I thought he looked pretty good, but, you know, maybe not fully back from where he's at. But no carries for Herbert, or one carry for Herbert, or whatever it was. I mean, he was barely in the game plan. And so even if Montgomery doesn't get 25 carries, I'm not asking for that necessarily, there needs to be 25 carries from running backs in this game, right? Like, that's... it's just not enough carries. The Bears just got destroyed in time of possession on that game. And you say, well, time of possession. Well, what happened to the defense on that last drive? Well, you know, the pass rush did not get home on that last drive. And yes, Kendall Vildor had a bad game because, you know, he's outmatched. And he blew coverage, and that sort of thing happens. But when you're out on the field, that when your defense is out on the field that long, these pass rushers that are getting home all day, eventually they get gassed. And so the way to combat that is to try to hold on to the ball a little longer, which is to run the ball and move the sticks. So, you know, that all plays together. And, you know, that's part of why this team has never really looked in sync at all. But let's talk about the defense real quick, because Mac's gone, Quinn's stepping up and playing incredibly well. He's at 10 sacks on the year. He's got another rookie quarterback. Or is he a rookie? I'm sorry. Like, I just never heard of this guy. Is he just a young guy? Like, what's his deal?
He's a young guy. Not a guy with a ton of experience. So a guy that a guy like Robert Quinn should be able to take advantage of. Because, again, the Lions line is young and they've invested a lot in it. They haven't played, at times they've played very well and kept their team in the game, but they've also had that lack of consistency. And look, Robert Quinn has the look of a guy right now that can absolutely take advantage of the chances that the Lions line is going to give him. They're not going to be perfect. It reminds me a little bit of playing a quarterback that the defense says, oh, he's going to give you some chances, right? He's going to throw you some balls. You got to catch them. And I feel that way about the Lions offensive line. They're going to give you some openings. They're going to give you some one-on-ones where the tackle oversets. And Quinn's got the tools to put that home right now. He's playing as – he's the best Bears defender, bar none, right now.
You think he's better than Roquan Smith?
I would say he and Roquan are playing at a very, very similar level, because Roquan played at a really high level on Sunday too.
Yeah, I mean, it's great because obviously he signed to that huge contract, and I know this game this year is kind of meaningless at this point, but it's nice to watch Bears players do well, and Quinn has been a good player in this league for a long time, and so it's exciting to see what he can do. And so, you know, now I'm kind of cheering for Robert Quinn to kind of see where those sack numbers go, and it would be nice to see if he can kind of get those up into a level that, quite frankly, you know, we haven't necessarily seen on this team in a while, right? Like, let's see, can he get to 15 sacks? Can he get to 17 sacks, right? I mean, those are kind of fun things to follow. He's definitely going to have his second best year as a pro in terms of sack numbers. And this late in his career, that's really impressive. And maybe he can continue to keep that going because he's likely on this roster next year. So those are exciting things. I think Roquan's ascension is really exciting stuff to keep watching. I think, you know, he had 17 tackles last week. I mean, that's crazy, right?
So numbers.
So let's see if he can, you know, can he top Urlacher's career, career high, season high, right? Can he top Lance Briggs's career season high? You know, there are records. You know, the record for tackles is 189. It's kind of a ridiculous number. It's by a random player. So, you know, maybe that's not possible, but can he top some of these like all-time great Bears that, you know, in recent memory that have really high tackle numbers? That's kind of exciting too. And, you know, he's all over the place. Maybe he can get rewarded. Romo was, you know, loving him up and down the field on Sunday. And if he can show out in these national primetime games over the next month, maybe his profile, you know, increases, and that's great. I want to see that. You know, can Jalen Johnson continue to play well, right? So there are some pieces on this team that even if this game isn't very excited, I'm excited for those players. I'm excited to watch those guys play whoever. I don't care if it's the Lions. I don't care if it's Kyler Murray and the Cardinals in the week following, right? I want to watch good players play football. I want to watch ascending players get better. I want to watch Travis Gibson and see where he goes, right? I want to see Kyrus Tonga, right? I want to see these guys and how they're doing, because they're going to be part of this team in the future.
Yeah, totally agree. The Bears have one guy at each level on defense right now. Robert Quinn is the guy on the defensive line. I know he's officially a linebacker, but he's a pass rusher. He's playing on the defensive line. Roquan, obviously the guy at the linebacking level to watch. And then Jalen Johnson has been quietly excellent. He is still excellent. He's not surrounded by a lot of talent, but whoever he is on is having a rough day every Sunday. And that's awesome. The couple of other guys you mentioned are young guys, right? Now Travis Gibson's getting reps because Mac's out. And he had a couple of nice plays on Sunday. He kind of had a couple of nice hustle plays, chased down a ball carrier from behind a line. Like, he is benefiting from teams pretty much keying up on Hicks when he's in there and trying to double Quinn because they know he's the primary sack threat. That means Gibson's going to get one-on-ones, and you want to see what he does with those. Kyrus Tonga is another guy that is playing really well in the middle.
stacking things up. He's not getting a ton of downs, but that's probably okay. He needs to be rotated and kept fresh because he's playing a power position. Probably going to see him early. You saw him early in the game against the Ravens. You're going to see him early in a game against the Lions trying to shut down the run and make them go, quote unquote, to their left hand, make them try and throw to that depleted wide receiver core with a new quarterback. That's really how you're going to try and force the Lions into beating you. You're almost going to dare them into that. Like, hey, we're going to put 8, maybe even 9 guys in the box. You're not going to run the ball. Now we want to see you throw it. And we want to see you throw it kind of deep. We're not talking about 2-yard speed outs. We want you to go deep down the seams and see if you can complete the ball. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. But that's definitely a riskier proposition for a team like the Lions. So I would see, you know, Tonga and Gibson playing big roles on Sunday. There aren't, unfortunately, too many other people to watch, like at the linebacking level, and say, oh, there's a developing young player, because Pace hasn't stacked those, or really even
they're not there
in the secondary. It's the same thing, right? You're really looking at Jalen Johnson and hoping he stays healthy. Duke Shelley's dinged up, so, you know, maybe we see some of the other guys coming in trying to get some of those reps, and they're gonna have to if Shelley's hamstring won't cooperate. But there's nobody that I'm really super excited to say, oh, you know, this guy's getting reps. He's been due. Like, let's get him on the field and see his reps. Right now it's like, oh, please hold up. Please don't get your name called out a lot. You know, and if somebody flashes, great. Awesome. But really, those are your three key guys on the Bears defense, one at each level, which is kind of nice. And then a couple of young guys up front to sort of, hey, what are they doing with the reps they get? The rest of the defense, you're just really kind of putting your blinders on and saying, oh, please don't get burned.
Well, that's kind of the preview. I want to talk about Thanksgiving, because growing up, Thanksgiving was always my favorite holiday, and I don't think as an adult that's changed. It's a little different how I approach the holiday, and it's been nice over the years that they've extended the number of games, right? Used to have the two. Used to always be the Lions would play and the Cowboys would play. And then they added that third game. So now it's like a full day of football. I mean, it's a lot of fun. You get the full day of football on Thanksgiving. You get the full day of football on Sunday for Thanksgiving. If you're into college, I'm sure there's college games all day too. But I'm not. But you get two of those full days where you get to watch three games straight. That's a lot of fun to me. So I like that. I like the food. I'm not going to lie. I'm a person who has enjoyed more than his share of food over the years. And this is a holiday where it's not only accepted, but encouraged to eat more food than you probably should. And so I wanted to ask you, EJ, what is the thing at Thanksgiving that you just need to have for you to feel like, yep, there it was. That was a good holiday.
Oh, geez. I think there's so many things. Growing up was the same for me. Thanksgiving was a huge family holiday. All my dad's side of the family in Buffalo usually came down to our house. We lived in a small town in upstate New York, and it was kind of the, oh man, it was the relative takeover, right? People would be sleeping like cordwood in sleeping bags, and, you know, huge kids table, and, you know, snowball fights or leaf raking or whatever the conditions were at the time. And it was a good 2 or 3 days to just kind of mash with that family. My cousins still talk about that. You know, we're all well on in our lives with our own families, and they still say, man, those sort of country Thanksgivings, when we were kids, they were the ones, man. It was all the hijinks and late night card games and, you know, pranks on aunts and uncles, and just the smell of food permeating through the house. Thanksgiving was always a central holiday to me. And I don't know, I take a little bit of offense that Thanksgiving's kind of become a speed bump between Halloween and Christmas now. And it has changed for me. We don't have the huge family celebrations anymore. But I guess there isn't one thing. My favorite thing about Thanksgiving that hasn't changed is sort of standing back a little bit from the fray. And when I was a kid, it was like I would hang out on the staircase, right? And I could look down into the living room, and there would be like 15 or 20 people like talking and laughing and toasting and just that sort of din, that holiday, like, you just don't get that sound very often of a bunch of people in your house like having a good time. And all at the same time in very different ways. And that sound for me became really a thing
as I got older and we did have big Thanksgivings, it would be at weird times. Like I would be, you know, you have to take the garbage out during Thanksgiving because there's a lot of, you know, you're just creating more waste, right? And I would go outside and we leave the windows open because, of course, you're steaming potatoes and cook a turkey and it gets really warm in the house with 15, 20 people in there. And I would stand outside the open window just for a minute before I put the trash in the can and just listen to people laugh and have a good time in my house. And that's the thing, like more than a food or a drink or a dessert or anything else. It's that coming together and really just enjoying each other's company. So that's probably the thing for me that makes it feel the most like Thanksgiving. Don't get it every year, but when I do, I really treasure it.
You know, it's interesting you say that because growing up, like both sides of my family are in the same town, right? So that no one moved away. And we would start off with my dad's side of the family, who are very much more of a quieter, conservative type, you know, people that kind of talk soft and kind of keep to themselves. And, you know, so you'd have the lunch over there and, you know, the conversation's low, right? And I'm always trying to, like, find a way to a TV, you know, even as like, you know, I mean, if you think I'm football obsessed now, you should have met me when I was a kid, right? Like I couldn't get enough of it. I was just, you know, that's all I could care about. Right. And so you have this like quietness that like starts to build a little bit. You go home, you kind of recover, you grab the second set of whatever the, you know, the side
the dishes
that,
yes,
that mom made, right? Yep. And you take it over to mom's side of the family, and that side of the family, you know, it's Scotch-Irish, right? You know, and, like things are flowing and, yeah, you know, and throughout the night, the volume just keeps going up and up and up and people are yelling over each other. And so that auditory element of the holidays is always fascinating for me to kind of listen back to because it's just this like all rise throughout the day, right? And then at some point it just people just take off and it just dies. But yeah, those holidays at my grandparents, you know, they had this old home that would have been where they lost it in the 2008 flood. Mm-hmm. But it would have been, you know, 120 130 year old home if it was still around today, and it had one of those big stairways, one of those old homes with that. And yeah, I remember that, you know, walking up there and you'd always try to like hit the, you know, reach up and hit the top and, you know, try to measure how tall you are and stuff like that. And there's a lot of those old, you know, just memories that you think about from auditory and the smells. You know, my grandma was great at cooking Mexican food. She made her own Mexican food with her own hot sauce.
Man, that's awesome.
And her hot sauce could only be consumed by like three people. Her, me, and maybe one other person, right? Who was brave enough to do it. So it was always like my own little personal pot with her of really hot sauce. So, you know, just a lot of memories like that. And that's great. For food wise for me, like I just love mashed potatoes and gravy and a little protein, right? Like that's really all I need. Mom's deviled eggs.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
You know, those are the best. Mother-in-law makes a great chocolate pecan pie. I mentioned it on the other podcast too. Those are the things that I look forward to these days. But you know, generally like kind of that mashed potato, protein, gravy, whatever. I'll get a vegetable. And that's pretty much it. And then I want a piece of pie. That's kind of where I'm at these days.
All right. Well, we're going to have a little bit of fun with the speed round. We're going to ask each other some questions about Thanksgiving themed things. So this is our speed round Thanksgiving edition as we don't have a guest this week. And I'm going to start off with, now, for those of you that aren't familiar with Bears Over Beer, speed round is, you know, short answers, fun. We're just going to keep it pretty light. I'm going to start off with what's the weirdest dish you've ever encountered at a Thanksgiving?
Weirdest dish. You know, I what's coming to mind is this like green jello, you know, kind of fluff stuff. It wasn't like a green jello mold, but it was like it must have had dairy in it too.
Yep.
And like even the thought of it makes me kind of sick right now. Right? like
yep. Like no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I do not like that.
No, it's not great. For me, on my side, it would be there is a great family. It's not a myth. It's just a great family story. It became known as Orange Death which, you know, on a Bears themes podcast seemed great. My uncle was in a phase where he was, he's a very good cook, but he was trying things far afield. And he basically made a sort of puree whip that had like carrot and parsnip and a bunch of other stuff. And it was this strange consistency where it was not quite mashed potato. It was a little thinner than that, but it was a little thicker than soup. And it was just, it didn't quite happen right, and it was one of those like a joke you're trying to explain, right? And my family also Irish, so not short with criticism, and it became nice try, but you didn't quite hit it, and forever known after that as orange death, because it was kind of neither here nor there, and the flavor wasn't amazing. So orange death is still a family touchstone.
Nice. What would you say your role is in the family get-togethers?
Ooh, I was thinking role, and I'm like, ooh, roles. I love roles. And then I'm like, role. My role, it's changed. Originally, it was the kid that would finish everything at the kids' table. I loved to eat when I was at the kids' table and would eat plate after plate after plate because I just had a crazy metabolism when I was a kid. And just general troublemaker. That was me. It was me and my cousin. My oldest male cousin would run around and like hang Star Wars figures from string and drop them down between the staircase behind my aunt's head and then say something so she'd turn around and freak out. Like, that was my role, is just general sort of like pre-Home Alone mischief maker. Was my role as a little kid, as a like college age guy that didn't always get to go home. I was sort of the convener. I was always the person that would pull people together, like, hey, you're gonna be around, you don't have family, like, come to our place. And we had some great Thanksgivings that way. It was always more the merrier and who's welcome, and so it was just pulling people together, and they're like, I don't know how to cook, and it's like, fine, what do you want to do? Like, bring something, bring a pie, bring beer, bring whatever you can. Like, we might just have pie and beer, but oh, that's okay, it's four college kids, who cares. So, and then as I got older, I'd always had a lot of jobs in kitchens, and so I started to cook. I cooked turkeys and then lots of different sides, and I always like to do something that's a little bit different that I just don't do, because you have more time on Thanksgiving, and I don't devote as much time to food prep as I would like to. So I don't mind doing a recipe that takes 2.5 or 3 hours on Thanksgiving, because I have it, and I'll put some music on and, you know, try some roasted vegetable medley with some special glaze or something. That's sort of where I went in sort of the 10 year ago period, and now it's just whatever, right? I'm just sort of the glue guy. You need beverages, I got it. You need desserts, I got it. You need me to just sit back and eat, I got it. You need me to drive, I can do that too.
Yeah, I think Aaron guy is that's the rule, because you get breaks, which I'm into, right? Like, you got to kind of step away from the madness.
So true.
And then, like, you get points. Like, you go out and you do chores, you know. And for me, it's like, yeah, run to the store. Like, you know, people don't like to do that. I'm like, yeah, I'd love to do that. Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah, I got it. Let's go. I'd take the fresh air.
Yeah, but that's the role that I like to sit in. Or I'm the guy that sits in the corner and watches the football game because, you know, it's Thanksgiving. There's football on. So, you know, generally I'm going to be by the TV if I'm there, or I'm going to run an errand. But yeah, what's your next one?
I was going to say favorite dessert, but that's mostly just for people that haven't listened to you before, because you have a go-to favorite dessert. There is one, and it holds the preeminent spot, and there is no like, oh, this or that.
Yeah, I mean, since I got introduced to that pie, it's pretty great. But I mean, if, you know, I like Thanksgiving because you get to eat pie. And that's kind of cool. I'm not a huge guy that's into cake. I mean, sometimes cake's fine, but, like, you know, I would rather have a piece of pie. And that's what Thanksgiving's all about, is pie. So, like, I'm into a piece of pie for sure. Like, that's what I'm going to have on Thanksgiving. If it's not that special pie, I'll have pumpkin pie. Like, right? I mean, I'm not against that. But I want a piece of pie.
And I think that might be why you and I get along, is because we're both, like, pie guys, and Thanksgiving is central to pie. Thanksgiving, yes, you can have a cake, yes, you can have some kind of homemade ice cream, you can have some, I've been to families where they had some kind of handmade Swiss roll, German, like, great, that's all cool, like, it's good, like, all dessert is good, but Thanksgiving, in my mind, pie. And
pie early, pie often, and the biggest thing is pie for breakfast, right? That is a Snyder family tradition, is like waking up the next day, and there's not a question of what you're having for breakfast. You're having a piece of pie, but what kind is the only question, because we would have multiple pies, and we would have... my mom always made a great apple. There would always be a pumpkin from somebody, or a pumpkin chiffon if that was something for somebody. There would be mincemeat pies. There would be berry pies. There would always be a bunch of pies, usually with handmade crusts, because it was like some odd competition within my family. But that didn't matter to me as a kid, because you would literally open up the fridge, or the second fridge, the one that was out of the garage, right? And you would have like five pies covered in wax paper. And as a kid, the day after Thanksgiving, that was the best thing ever. My mom would always make handmade whipped cream, because we lived in a dairy town, and she would take the cream off the milk after it sat on the back porch, right, and whip it with a little bit of sugar or vanilla or both. And there was always a little, you know, bowl of handmade whipped cream, and you could put it on whatever pie you wanted and have it for breakfast. And it was like licensed. Nobody looked at you funny as a, you know, 6 or 8 year old kid with like a huge slice of apple pie and a mound of whipped cream on it. And everybody's like, yep, that's acceptable. Like, and that alone made it the best holiday ever. So like Thanksgiving, like, I believe you're right, that pie is just central to Thanksgiving. It doesn't really matter what kind. And just as a visual aid, even though we're not doing this as a video podcast, I brought pie. Because we started early and we got an apple pie. This is not a handmade pie. This is a Trader Joe's pie. And it is not just apple. It is like apple, brown sugar, and maple. And it has been sitting here for the entire podcast, just sort of like wafting up at my nose and tempting me. So I'm just going to take a bite of it, because I'm tired of waiting, quite frankly. And I'm old enough that I don't have to anymore. That's the greatest thing. I don't have to ask anybody if I can take a bite of pie. I can just take a bite of pie.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I do not have a piece of pie, but now I feel jealous and wish I did have a piece of pie.
Because this is delicious.
I'll bet. So I have one more question, and that is on Thanksgiving, and probably on any other holiday, but like Thanksgiving specifically, football's not on, or, you know, you've moved on. What are the games that you play?
Oh,
are they outside, or is it board games, or like, what are the games that you guys are playing?
Yeah, so when I was little, we would go outside whenever we could, and a lot of times there was snow at Thanksgiving in upstate New York when I was a kid. So we would have snowball fights, build snow forts, whatever. If it was dry, which was rare, we would make big leaf mazes. We would take the rakes and we would rake out these entire big, because we had maple trees, so we had all these leaves, and we would rake out like leaf mazes. And then we basically kind of like play tag in the leaf maze. You had to run inside the lines, and, you know, eventually it just turned into like free tackle in the leaf pile. Like all rules were lost. If we couldn't go outside because it was really nasty, really cold, there were a lot of card games. Adults play different card games. We play things like Gin Rummy. We're like a super big puzzle family. We occasionally play board games like Sorry or Trouble or Mousetrap, the kind of classic like late 70s, early 80s board games. But more would be like cards. Like somebody would break out cards around a, you know, a little card table, and somebody would play something. We weren't for the most part betting games. Occasionally late at night, you know, the Jameson come out and people would play play card games for thumbtacks or whatever. But no, it was more like, yeah, Gin Rummy. We weren't a big Pinochle family, but you know, or Canasta. I know there's families that played Pinochle and Canasta. That wasn't really us. We played simpler stuff, like we play hearts occasionally, but more like Gin Rummy and stuff like that. Kids would be like Go Fish and whatever, but cards for the most part.
Yeah, my grandpa taught me how to play poker. My grandma taught me how to play rummy. And my uncle taught me how to play chess. And oh, so
you're set.
A lot of that. A lot of that. And, you know,
I was going to say, any blackout in the Midwest, you are set for days.
Yeah, my uncle got into chess, and, you know, being a smart kid, you know, he kind of, I knew how to move the pieces, and he kind of, you know, would challenge me, and it just kind of became an annual tradition where I'd play him. And, I got the better of him more than I think he would want to admit. And you know, that would always kind of irritate him, but it was always fun. They were always like fun games. And I mean, I'm the slowest chess player because I'm just, you know, I don't play very often. And so I would just, you know.
I can totally see that about you just because of the way you approached the mock drafts that we've done in the past. I cannot imagine you as like a speed round chess
player. Oh, no, speed chess, I'd be terrible. But I take a long time and, you know, and you know, a lot of times I'd get the better of them. But, yeah, a lot of fun with, you know, I love poker, too. Like, poker's a great thing. My grandpa taught me how to, you know, the basics of poker. He didn't teach me hold'em, right? Like, you know, that wasn't a thing back then. But, you know, five-card draw, seven-card stud, like those kinds of things. Like, he taught me all of those games.
And what did you play for? When you played poker when you were a kid, what did you play for?
He always had a big jar of, you know, change and pennies, and we'd use that. So,
We always played for weird stuff because we very rarely had change. Like when I learned how to play poker, I was in Boy Scouts and we'd be at like campouts at like cabins and stuff. And so it wasn't like he had change or money or whatever, but we would always find stuff and we would play for like matches, right? Or whatever was small and available. I mean, I remember playing for matches. I remember playing for we were at a fishing cabin one time. We played for like bobbers and sinkers, right? Guy had a whole like chest full of like, and we just divided them up. And the big ones were 10 and the small ones were 5.
That's fun.
And, yeah. I mean, we just played for whatever like small thing we could get. So it was always funny. It was like, what'd you play poker for? Because we very rarely played for money. So good times. But Thanksgiving in general, I think, is really about coming together, and my favorite Thanksgiving tradition in my family is that we typically gather in the kitchen it was typically when the turkey was being stuffed. We don't always do that anymore, but we've kept the tradition going where we get everybody who's at the house, whoever it is, in the kitchen with a glass of whatever, and the kids get sparkling cider and, you know, adults get whatever they want, and we go around one by one and we just say what we're thankful for, and that's it. It's super simple. But it can be really moving to look back on the last year and say, hey, this has been a really good thing. Like, you know, even in the last couple of years, which have been very hard for a lot of people, to say, yeah, they were really hard, but I'm really thankful for, you know, the ability to do this or this house or this family or this job or this opportunity to go do a thing or a friendship with somebody really special. And it becomes one of those things that is really like the core of the holiday. So that's my favorite, like, Thanksgiving deal.
I mean, growing up, it was to, you know, see which uncle was going to puke first from drinking too much alcohol. But I like your sentiment a little better. And just to kind of...
Well, I didn't say what happened later. That's what happened earlier.
You know, the Scottish-Irish stuff. So this is our third year of the podcast. We've had a really good time of bringing this to you. Obviously, the Bears season's over. This is not going to go anywhere. But there's still some stuff to learn from. If you're going to stick with us, we appreciate that because, you know, we really enjoy doing this, even though the Bears aren't very good, because there's always something to learn. There's always something to talk about. And obviously, there would be no podcast if you guys weren't here. This is, you know, you guys are why we do this. And we love the interaction on the website. We love the interaction on Twitter. You know, we love hearing from you. All of that stuff makes it all worth it. Being able to, you know, for example, you know, connecting with Chad, who sent me that amazing bottle of bourbon, right? Like, what in the world? Like, how cool is that, right? And, you know, we've had multiple people over the years send us beers, but even just like sending a note or, you know, interacting with the tweet and saying, you know, hey, really enjoyed the podcast this week. That means a lot to us. And that's a really big deal to me because this is a lot of fun. I've been obsessed with football my whole life. Like, football has been one of the biggest passions of my life, if not the biggest passion. When I wasn't able to play anymore, I found other ways to be involved, and that involved writing and now talking about football. And I love it. And I hope that I can bring that love to other people that enjoy it as well, and we can share that experience. So that's what I'm thankful for. EJ, what about you?
I've got something special for you.
Okay.
I didn't know I had it for you, and now I do. Just exactly what you talked about, the fact that we are thankful for the people that interact with us, that listen to us, the folks that make this a thing. And I got a message from one of them this week, and it's worth reading. So this is a message that came in over Patreon. We're on Patreon now. So if you want to be a patron, go to patreon.com, search Bears Over Beers, and you'll find us there. But this is from a guy named Uzair. And it simply says this: buzzing to support the podcast. Thanks for helping to teach a Pakistani lad about the game. Between this, the film room, Bears Over Beers, you've become a massive part of my NFL fandom. And, you know, I don't know where Azir lives, but it doesn't really matter, right? It's somebody that reached out from around the world that found one of these brands and started to listen to the others and has grown his love of the game, or started to grow his love of the game based off of things that we say, things that we share, things that we put out in the world. That's really cool. Like, that makes long nights, late nights, long weeks, things that go well, things that go poorly, all worthwhile, right? Somebody reaches out and says, I'm understanding football more because of things that you do. Like, that's freaking cool.
Yeah, 100%. And just to your point, this is my second podcast today. This is a 15-hour work day for me. So, but we love it, and it's great, and stuff like that just will fuel us and keep us going. And so appreciate all of you that have done that, and, you know, stick with us the rest of the year. We'll have some fun. There will be some fun stuff to talk about, and Justin Fields will get healthy. We'll get some more starts out of him, and we'll learn some stuff. So that's it for this week, man. Like, you got anything else you want to talk about?
No, that's it. Enjoy your version of Thanksgiving, whatever it is, food, friends, family, football, in any, all of the above order. Take it in. Take a second to go outside, chill, have a beer in your hand, and say that you're thankful for something. And we will come back and talk to you next week. Hopefully have some good things to talk about coming out of a game against a very winless Lions team. And even if not, like JB said, hang out. We'll have fun for the rest of the year. So until then, happy Thanksgiving and bear down.